Awesome. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Hagelin from the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, in the middle of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia. I'm here, of course, with your co-host, Mr. Phil Larness.
Thank you, Dean Hagelin. And you, of course, are speeding through the introduction like never before
because
we've never had this many people
at the
table before.
That's right. It's a huge Your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Our biggest clientele?
Yeah, our clientele. They're not just guests. They're also clients. What? What are you talking about?
That's not right.
You don't care. You're getting on a plane to Chicago. What the hell do you care?
No, wait.
Do you want to handle...
got back from a plane.
Oh, exactly. Chicago. Exactly. Somehow you're in Chicago right now and you're here. That's right, because this isn't pre-recorded at all.
No,
okay.
That's right. Ixnay on the pre-recording name.
You did a show, a TV show, Dean Hagelin.
Do you remember this?
I do, actually.
Yes.
Very fun.
Yeah.
And it was called Femme Fatales.
Femme Fatales.
And the name of the episode?
Was...
Oh my goodness.
Girls Gone Dead.
Your Girl's Gone Dead. Thank you.
You may
recognize the voice of the lovely and talented Catherine Annette.
Catherine Annette, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi.
Our second time guest.
Where's my present?
Oh, that's right.
Two-time guests are supposed to get presents.
Right. Well,
You've got an hour.
It's on the shelf somewhere around you. Just pick something to choose.
If it's on that signed Star Trek box.
Yeah, nice try.
Sorry. And who else do we have, Dean?
We have Madison Dillon, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello. Can I have the aliens?
No. You have to come back. I actually wish you would take those because I've never been a fan.
What?
I mean, I've been a fan of aliens, but I don't mean those ones up there. Yeah,
these
it's
are the
above
action
the kitchen. I mean,
but they hang
it's
over.
Just.
They're hanging over your food.
Oh, so sad. How sad.
And who else do we have?
We have Mark Altman, ladies and gentlemen, the creator, producer,
writer. Directed several of the episodes, right, of Femme Fatales? Including the final?
Yeah, I'm just completely overwhelmed right now because I walked in here and everybody was like, hey, good to see you. And then all of a sudden we go on the air and it's like, hey, we're here with the Rational Exuberance. And it's driving, making me crazy. Okay. My head is about to explode.
We start strong and then we just...
I feel like I'm on a roller coaster.
Dean Hagelin, I've met Mark Altman before, and he's a little nervous because he doesn't know where, and he's concerned that he might have been a dick to me. And what's funny about this is that
it wouldn't be the first time.
People's concern with me. So somehow there's something about me that makes people think that the first time they met me, they were a dick. First time when we worked with Marina on Spectres.
That's right.
Marina Sirtis was a dick to you, but that's okay. She's a dick to everyone.
No, she wasn't. But I said, you know, Marina, we actually met several years ago, and she goes, oh, please tell me I wasn't just a total bitch to you. And I don't know what that is. But, Mark, we actually met in Hawaii.
Oh, my God, at the Hawaii Film Festival?
Hawaii International Film Festival. I was there with a film called The Party Crashers. You were there with a film called Free Enterprise. I went and saw the film.
You were cool.
All anybody could talk about is how cool the Free Enterprise guys were. And that was a big deal because I met Mark at the exact same little mixer where I met Quentin Tarantino. You know what? It was cool enough to meet Quentin Tarantino, but I actually liked Mark. I mean, he was actually cool and interesting. And a huge fan of Free Enterprise, which I saw there, and then when it came out in theaters, I brought a whole bunch of my friends to see it in Santa Monica, I think at the Criterion.
That's great.
And I still have trading cards from the movie.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
They were trading cards.
They were limited edition trading cards. And the only way you could get the Shatner trading card was if you bought the soundtrack album. The rest of the trading cards you could get, you know, other ways, but the Shatner was a very rare thing. Yeah, but I got to tell you a story about Hawaii. By the way,
the Eric McCormick trading card turns out to be a pretty big deal because he had a decent career for himself after...
He did.
After you discovered him.
That was true. We did discover him.
and did he play you in the film? Is that fair to say?
No, it's not fair to say. He played the character known as Mark. And as I...
who was an editor of a sci-fi magazine, if I'm not mistaken.
Let me dissuade
you
of this foolish notion right now.
I'm loving this.
The thing about... you know, people say, you know, it's a Ramona Clef in the sense that Seinfeld was Ramona Clef. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld was Jerry Seinfeld, but it didn't mean that he, like, you know, made out in Schindler's List in real life. So
it also didn't mean that he was actually believable as Jerry Seinfeld in the show, which was oddly enough.
So all I'm saying is that there is a difference between the character of Mark as portrayed by the talented and funny Eric McCormick and myself. I mean, he's much better looking than I am. He's much funnier than I am.
Clearly.
Okay, but wait, I want to hear the funny story in Hawaii.
He's much more Canadian than me.
Oh, that's true.
But not you.
That's right. I'm now American. What's the funny story? You said I have a funny story.
This is funny because, yes, we also met Quentin for the first time in Hawaii.
You did too, at the same
mixer. He was at the festival.
And he had come to Free Enterprise, and it was great because he reenacted the entire movie, particularly all of Shatner's parts, but he was doing it three times the speed of the movie, so I think he did it in about 10 minutes. It was really funny what he was doing. I was like, and I'll play all the parts, and it was like great. But we went to this party at a tree house. The director and I, Ron Meyer Burnett and myself. And it was really funny because it was like we were suddenly having, you know, flashbacks to Return of the Jedi. I mean, it was really weird. There were a bunch of stone people like hanging out in like this.
Did you know that a lot of the filmmakers were put up at the treehouse?
There's two treehouse hotels in Hawaii.
No, this was at someone's house. There's this gigantic treehouse, and many of the filmmakers, that was actually their accommodation.
Well, I'm glad we were at the Four Seasons.
Yes.
But I will say this. I mean, it was just this
wild.
We started to sing Celebrate the Love, and nobody knew what we were talking about, but it may have just been the alcohol. I don't know. But it was like that scene at the end of Return of the Jedi. There's a bunch of people hanging out in this treehouse.
Now, for anyone who hasn't seen the Free Enterprise, I have no use for you, so stop listening.
You just reduced the size of the podcast
tears
audience.
Tears for Caesar. Tears for Caesar. No, you will now. I'll loan it to you. Okay. Did you really write Tears for Caesar, the song?
Yes, me and William Shakespeare. It was my greatest collaboration.
Oh, my goodness.
As much as I love working with Steve Crozier, working with Shakespeare was even hot. But he worked with Alan Loeb. So we've all worked with great collaborators
I just want to put this in some historic perspective for our younger guests on the show today. This was before William Shatner was accepted as an international treasure.
He was a young
boy. Let alone a national treasure. In fact, I remember one review of your film that said, who knew that the guy that would end up doing the best William Shatner impersonation would end up being William Shatner. And this was really the film. I mean, I honestly, to this day, you know, I was a huge fan of Boston Legal and the work that Shatner did on it. And I don't think that happens. I don't think David E. Kelley even thinks of casting him without his work in Free Enterprise.
Well, I would agree with you. I don't know if Shatner would. But, you know, the funny thing
Mr.
about
Shatner.
That, I call him Bill. But, you know, to you, he's Mr. Shatner. So anyway, the funny thing about Bill is that he you know, at the time he hadn't really done a lot of comedy, and when we tried to get him for that movie, you know, he didn't know. You know, we were independent filmmakers who were trying to get, you know, a star of his caliber, and he said no to us a couple of times, and we sent what he now affectionately calls the tear-stained letter, and we basically said, you know, Bill, this is why we want you to be in the movie, and we want this movie to do for you what Boogie Nights did for Burt Reynolds and what LA Confidential did for Kim Basinger, and, you know, we admired you so much on Fridays, you know, which was this, you know, and we loved you on Saturday Night Live playing Oliver North and, you know, the Mute Marine, and we never, ever mentioned Star Trek at all, and we just talked about all these comic tour de forces that he did.
We loved you as White Comanche.
Yeah, and Alexander the Great.
All your films in Esperanto.
And that's where, yeah.
He did, William Shatner.
All one of them, yeah.
Do you know the Esperanto? It was a made-up language that was supposed to become the international
language, right.
And there was one feature film made entirely in Esperanto, and it starred William Shatner.
Yeah, the idea was that the world would be a better place and everyone would get along if they all spoke the same language. And so the whole world within 25 years would, you know Esperanto. Now, I think there are about 6 people who speak Esperanto. Yes.
Which makes more Americans know Esperanto than actually know the metric system. It is true.
But, the thing about Shatner was, you know, it was funny. After we finished the movie, the people from Priceline actually asked for a copy of the movie because they were conceiving of a campaign where Shatner would sing or do something in a club. And, you know, basically their whole campaign and that whole Priceline was based on Free Enterprise. I never even got a lousy plane ticket out of it. It's very frustrating to me.
So, so wait a second. He got shares in that. I got
nothing.
I read he was at $262 million in stock options for Priceline for doing those commercials.
Yeah.
He never sent you a dime?
No, no. And then
you call him Bill?
And then, in fact, dollar bill. And then, in fact, you know, he, you know, and then he got Big Giant Head at the, you know, in Third Rock from the Sun. And, you know, look, I think our movie had a lot to do with showcasing him in a
absolutely, in because he plays himself in this film, and you say that he hadn't done a lot of comedy. What's really interesting is, of course, he doesn't play it as comedy. I mean, it's really touching and poignant, his performance in it's a wonderful dramatic performance.
I completely agree, and I think that also is what he does with his spoken word records, which is what makes them so funny. Right. You know, when he, you know, like Rocket Man, when he acts out, it's like, I'm a Rocket Man. And, you know, he performs it, you know, like as different roles. And I mean, what's great about Shatner...
Yeah, I want you to continue that performance.
What I love about Shatner is that he does anything with absolute conviction. You know, he's a man of such passion that he puts that into whatever he does. And I think that, you know, people often find that funny or satirical. But I mean, that's the thing that I personally love about, you know, Shatner. And that's why, to me, the original Star Trek is so operatic. You know, people say, oh, he's hammy. I don't think he's hammy. I think he's larger than life.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know.
Dennis Miller on the MTV Movie Awards one year in the late 80s when Shatner performed all the nominated songs for best songs from a movie. After one particular performance, Dennis Miller just broke and just was, you know, he was emceeing and he just started busting up. And he said, let's face it, balls-wise, Shatner really has gone where no man's gone before. And that's it. I mean, he just balls out everything he does.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, anyone who is a fan of science fiction, anyone who's a fan of Star Trek, of course, but really science fiction, genre filmmaking, comic books, filmmaking itself, or, oh, by the way, really delicious character comedy, should absolutely see Free Enterprise if they haven't before. That's Mark, right. Am I ever going to get to see a sequel?
Man, that's a, you know, I've gotten that question a lot. I actually had written a script for a sequel, and there were some people who expressed some interest in doing it. It really is something that my writing partner and the director of Free Enterprise is really pushing and more involved with than I am. I'm very busy with other projects, so I haven't been, you know, as focused on that. Let's put it this way. I would love to see it happen. I know that, you know, Bill Shatner has expressed an interest. Other people have expressed interest. There's a great script for it. I mean, it is much bigger and... much more ambitious than the first movie. So, I mean, I would not say never say never, but, you know, like I said, I don't know, you know, to what extent I would be involved or if it'll ever happen, but I hope it does because people really love the movie. I mean, I'm one of them.
And if not, you'll at least let me read the script, right?
Sure. Maybe we could do the podcast version.
Now you...
Maybe we'll do the radio, the audio version.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I love when we have production meetings on the...
Of course, everybody does. You were all at Comic-Con this a week ago, more than a week ago now.
Technically.
And I think the best way to start...
When this airs.
Yeah, since this is Monday, August 1st. Happy August. Rabbit.
God in the future.
Thank you, everyone, for the birthday wishes.
Madison. Oh, yeah. Happy. How was that birthday?
My birthday was...
We'll talk about it next week.
Happy birthday. Too late now.
Can we all sing for you?
No.
Yes, let them sing.
Too late.
I kind of want to hear them sing.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Yeah.
Happy...
Go ahead, Catherine, please.
I know. Tried to do the Marilyn Monroe voice, and you shot me down. So.
Madison, you said about this is the best introduction to Comic-Con. You had never been to Comic-Con before, and you want to live there, not in San Diego, at Comic-Con.
At Comic-Con, actually, I'm a Comic-Con virgin, first of all. So I was like, everybody's like, you're gonna be overwhelmed by Comic-Con, all this stuff. So I was like, okay, preparing myself. Well, as soon as you get there, there's like costumes everywhere, which personally, I would love to be a character, like as a person in real life.
What?
And
you didn't know that they're dressed up?
No, I didn't realize so much. And so I want to go back and put glitter all over and be like Poison Ivy or something crazy like that and just like be that person. But anyway,
so... I'm stopping you.
I'm going to next year, for awesome. Sure, for okay. sure.
By the way, it's a great way to get off jury duty, apparently, right? To do that.
Well, so just like walking in there, it's like you're in Disneyland on steroids or something so crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like you're in a fantasy or like a whole nother world, which I personally love it better than this world. Yeah. So I would just like to live there. I think it'd be so cool.
Now, Dean, am I right in, you know, I haven't been to Comic-Con in a few years as it's become ever more corporate. Am I right in thinking that based on what she's describing, Madison would love Dragon Con even more?
You're exactly right, because Dragon Con is Comic-Con without all the corporate, like, trying to shove a TV show down your throat.
It's run by fans. It's entirely run by fans, so it's every bit as large.
Yes, but the costumes are more amazing.
Seriously?
In downtown Atlanta, all in these hotels that are connected by habit trails.
Yes.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah,
I don't know. You remember habit trails? I'm looking at Steve like, Steve, give me something. boy, I'm old.
Habit trails.
No. There were these things called hamsters before they were extinct.
Anyway. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, it's fan run. They say fire marshals that the buildings only have to have 40,000 people. So they say 40,000 people attend.
It's 100,000 easily.
It's at least 62,000.
And they have a parade, kind of just an impromptu parade of all the costumes.
Yeah. So
the
like,
second day, all of downtown Atlanta is. Road Warrior is the only way I can describe it. Like this parade of sci-fi characters.
3,000 stormtroopers, all the 501 chairs.
When is it this year?
This year?
Are you a guest?
Yeah, I'm a guest.
When?
It's Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day weekend in Atlanta.
Perhaps you want to come and support the thing.
Can I be your plus one?
Yeah. I already got a plus one.
Oh, his heterosexual life partner,
Phil Larness.
As by your side, as if I've always been here and always will be.
It's funny. That's how I describe Steve.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also how Joan Collins describes Spock in City on the Edge of Forever.
No, she doesn't.
As if he's been by your side.
Oh, yes.
Will be.
Okay, not heterosexual life partner.
No, that was cut out. Interesting. In Harlan Ellison's version of the script, that is what she said.
Because that would have avoided a lot of bad KS fiction had she said that. We could have gotten that out of the way early.
Madison, where are you from?
I'm from Wichita, Kansas.
Woo!
Yeah.
I was just driving through there last year.
I've flown over.
And her little dog, too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Toto.
And when did you come to LA?
Probably about, actually I went to San Diego first.
What?
Yeah, believe it or not. I went to college for one semester, and I realized college was not for me. And
this is a recurring theme, by the way, of performers that we've had on the show over the last month. People going to college for one semester learning pretty much what they needed to know, which is, I should get out of college.
Exactly, because I joined a sorority, too, so I learned how to party. and then I left. Kappa Alpha Theta, they just got shut down, though, so I guess I'm glad I'm not there anymore.
Wow.
But then I moved to Los Angeles, and I decided I'm never leaving. Ever again.
Unless you get to move into Comic-Con full-time.
Yes. Oh, that's such a good one. Yeah, I like that. You're so smart.
Well, wait a sec, though.
Yeah.
When you were in San Diego, how did you not connect to Comic-Con?
I don't know. I think knowing, Mark and Steve here, I've learned so much, actually. And I knew nothing about this kind of stuff. And I don't know how I didn't. I don't know how is a good question. But basically... I found it eventually through these wonderful guys, and I have fallen in love.
Aww, that's awesome.
Yes.
Were you reading comic books or anything like that in Wichita?
Archie.
The classic.
She's reading the Grain Report. Oh, well, I see the cornmeal is...
But now I'm doing this thing called Starship Smackdown with Mark, and it's all the starships. They go against each other. So
yeah,
I'm learning.
Yes, you did. I know. And I had a question whether or not I would be on the podcast now that I'm so erudite on it. All things considered, you know, we've elevated our stature a little bit, sir. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
And I don't know if you're an Arrested Development fan.
Of course.
Okay, well,
we have two eyes and a heart, don't we?
There's that episode said, Will Arnett is, they think he's killed, you know, cases. And don't edit this piece to make it sound like I killed Earl Milford, you know? And then they show it on Fox, says, I killed Earl Milford. So I'm like, when we're doing the NPR piece, I'm saying, and don't cut this piece that we look like idiots, that we really care about Starship Smackdown, that we're, it's serious and that's not satirical. Like, don't cut out the part where we say it's frivolous and satirical. Don't make me look like I really, like, oh, is the Enterprise going to defeat the Serenity? I don't know. Let's find out. Yeah, so. No, they didn't. Because it's NPR. If it was Fox.
Well, they, or if it was your Chill Back Hollywood hour, because now we can edit it.
Exactly. We'll
I'm going to sound like a lunatic.
That's kind of what you signed up for coming up on this. So, Madison, how did you connect with Mark and Steve? Was it getting cast in Femme Fatales?
Yeah, actually, it was. I don't believe they're actually at the casting, but being cast in Femme Fatales, and then they were both...
Were we not at the casting, Steve? We were at, like, every casting for a season.
Were you?
Yeah, they were at a producer session.
Oh, maybe... Yeah, actually, maybe at the producer session.
You were in Whittier.
I definitely was in Whittier.
I think we were in the casting session.
Oh, really?
Definitely was.
So they definitely were, for those keeping score at home, they definitely were or were not.
I was so memorable.
I don't look.
Do you remember, Madison, do you remember at the audition, do you remember that wall of handsome? Oh. That was Mark and Steve.
That was Crow.
It's so funny. Well, I was so, there were questions.
I was there too.
They were questioning my boobs the whole time, if I'd be scared of showing my boobs.
Okay, no, we weren't.
So,
then I wasn't there.
The casting was.
Oh, the casting was. Because I never asked that.
Yeah, no. They never did. No, it was the two casting directors. So I was like, no. So I was so into, like, I actually showed them, like, little clips of, like, my little, like, chicken cutlet thingies I put in to make them bigger. And so I was so into that. I was like,
okay, you know what? I don't know anything about auditioning for women.
Well, when it says sexy, you put in those little, they look like gummy little, whatever, little chicken cutlets,
chicken
pretty much.
Cutlets.
So you put them in your bra.
So where's the Parmesan?
So basically, I was so caught up in that, like,
Your bra, basically, with these jelly rubber things.
So yeah, that was. But then, I showed them. I was like, oh look, I had these little things in.
I'm doing that now.
You wearing chicken
cutlets?
I did not know.
Yeah.
I just thought you've been working out. They saw that.
So basically, long story.
The casting directors. I want to make clear that Steve and I were not in that session.
Yes, they.
I was in Whittier.
No, but I actually got to know them when I was on set, and it was like they were just two amazing people. And actually, it grew to be like I feel like they're like close friends. Like I feel so close.
So tell us about the role in which you were cast and the episode you were in.
Oh goodness! I honestly have to say my character is my favorite character ever. It's like seriously the best character. It's she's really smart. But she plays this whole, like, ditzy, kind of fun, dumb act that she, like, puts on, which is really cool and fun because I'm normally cast as that person.
Right.
And I believe the script got changed, like, halfway through the filming to where my character comes out and she's actually very smart. And she has this whole thing that she's, like, thought up in her head. And she's just very, like, she's two-dimensional. So it's, like, I get to play, like, two different kinds of characters. I get to play a ditzy, dumb character, and I get to play a really smart character. And it's just kind of just fun to do this whole drastic change, and it's not like all one note, which is really exciting.
And which episode is this?
Girls Gone Dead.
Girls Gone Dead.
Okay.
But then we have Visions coming out, which just aired,
and
it's airing again, coming up.
Right?
Yes.
It's a two-parter. No,
this whole time travel thing is confusing the hell out of me. But yes, I guess it aired in the ancient past, and we've done it. What? How's Galactica go? This has all happened before, and it'll happen again. So
August 7th is going to air.
Yes, the season finale.
Season finale August 7th,
and it's the same character.
Same character, which is super exciting. I come in about halfway through, and it's exciting to see what happens with them.
Wow.
And basically, it's the same character, and the exact same character, and she does her whole Alexis thing again. Ah. So I guess you'll see.
I think it's remarkable, Mark and Steve, that you would cast Madison despite her obvious lack of enthusiasm. If only she could get excited about this.
I have to tell you. I'll tell you a secret. When I met Madison on set, I was talking to Madison on set, I said, this has to be an act.
Right.
This cannot be for real. No one is really like this, particularly an actress who could be this enthusiastic and this. I mean, she'd go up to the craft service guy. Good morning, craft service guy. I mean, you expected to see like a little cartoon bird on her shoulder, you know? I mean, it's like, you know, good morning, Mr. Grip, you know? She was just so sweet. And I said, it got to be an act. And what I've learned subsequently is that it's not an act. She really is that sweet and nice and friendly and then there's Catherine.
Oh. Oh no. Now Catherine, we're big fans of Catherine here at Chill Pack.
Well, so am I.
In fact, I don't think I've ever mentioned this to Dean. I am a cultural correspondent for a radio station in the United Kingdom, in London, and they're fans of Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And fans of yours, Catherine. Ooh. They heard that show and they, like one whole time, I was like, I would really like to stop talking about Catherine's career right now and plug my own projects. Would that be possible? Is what I found myself saying. Yeah, they were very impressed by Catherine there in London.
How can you not be?
You are becoming an international.
Is that what you're wearing to Comic-Con next week?
I should.
I mean, next year?
They also really, they wanted to know more about these sword fighting parties, and which sounds so, that sounds right.
Children's parties for you. Yeah. Ticket, I'll come to the UK
and you'll talk about
fight over there. I just have to check the swords. I can't carry
Now, Catherine, you're back on, you're in Visions as well.
Yes, I am.
Yes, and are you playing the same character that you played in Girls Gone Bad?
I am playing Tiffany, and I am also Alexis's best friend, like in Girls Gone Dead and in real life.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
I know, and we're inseparable.
And the rest is history.
And then we're topless in bed together. On the show. On the show.
It's mighty fun.
I got that. From
But she also, I mean, she obviously, like all the characters, I think Alexis as well, she grows a little bit because the Girls Gone Dead, it's their first murder. And they kind of like the taste of blood. So in this next episode...
It tastes kind of like chicken cutlets.
It does.
Sorry, there was an obvious joke just sitting out there that I had to... If I don't do the obvious, why do you have me around?
And so we get there and we're put in a position where guys are, you know, yanking us around again. And there's not even a question. We're like, well, we're going to take them down. Good old murder style. So we all do our own thing. I don't really get my hands dirty because I'm a
manipulator.
Prissy bitch, right? Manipulator, but I do get my my friends and my minions and everything to do it.
Your fingerprints aren't on anything.
Exactly. So when these other girls are in jail, I'm just going to be on the other side in Mexico.
No, Mark, we talked to Steve a lot about kind
of. But he was in Whittier today.
He's in Whittier right now. So about the origins of the show and the inspiration behind the show, this idea of having characters in an anthology show, a couple of characters recur in a later episode. Did you know that you were going to do that all along? Did it happen in just the writing stage when you first wrote Girls Gone Dead, we should bring these characters back, or was it after they were cast?
We sort of knew early on that it was something in the inception of the show, because the anthology format is such an old format that, particularly for a younger audience, contemporary audience, it's really hard for them to wrap their heads around. Even now we find, well, it's every episode's a different story with different characters. We don't understand that. It's like, well, did you ever see The Twilight Zone? Did you ever see Alfred Hitchcock Presents? No. You know, it's like I saw Jersey Shore, and so you know, it's sort of like difficult for them to sort of grasp the concept. So we were looking at ways that we could make the anthology format more embraceable. And one of the things we did was with our host, well, we cast the very sexy Rod Serling, you know, Tana Phoenix. And in addition to her sort of bookending the show, she also plays different characters in the show, which is in a lot of cases the catalyst for the drama. But one of the other things we wanted to do was have maybe a character that had a large role in one episode come back in a small role in another. So there's a cohesiveness to the universe, and it's a shared mythology. And I think that's something in genre shows that people love, and in gaming and stuff like that. And it was something that we wanted to bring to the show. So it all takes place in the world of Cuesta Verde, which is a fictional town, which we took from Poltergeist, the fictional town of Poltergeist. And it makes it a lot of fun because we can bring characters back. And, you know, particularly when there's an actor that we really like, You know, because the problem with the anthology is once you've shot with them and they're done and they're not dead, it's like, oh my God, we'd really like to see them again. So we sort of try and find ways to bring people back that we like, you know. And, you know, in the case of both Catherine and Madison, they were not only, you know, characters that we really liked, but we liked them as people and as actors. And so it made it really easy. And particularly with the season finale, we sort of wanted to tap into sort of the mythology of the show we created. And we brought back a bunch of characters. In fact, I don't know if Dean remembers, Dean was supposed to be in the episode. He was traveling because Kip was going to be back. So right, we have Jay Roma back, Charlie O'Connell is back. And we actually, you are technically in the episode because there is a cameraman filming Charlie keeps turning around going, "Hey Kip, are you getting this?" And so you got to be there without having to do any of the work or the residual. Yeah.
And by the way, your best work.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, what did I did there?
A face for radio.
And will there be more of this? Because congratulations, there's a season two was announced, correct?
Yeah, you know, season two was announced. It's premiering in January. We've already started shooting episodes for season two, and the plan is to, you know, continue to do this, you know, where it makes sense. You know, there are plans afoot, you know, to bring back characters. I mean, the girls have already reappeared, you know, in a smaller role in an extra episode called Extracurricular Activities, directed by Rob Burnett, and they star in a scene with Vivica Fox, and it sort of ties into the mythology of Girls Gone Dead, and it's a nice little scene that they're in. So,
she's amazing.
It was the best experience. Really? I mean, it was so cool. Yeah, she's absolutely so beautiful. Oh my gosh.
Right?
Yeah. Like, I don't know how old she is, but she looks like she's like 20-something. She looks so good.
I know, sitting beside her at the panel at Comic-Con, I was just like, wait, that can't be Vivica, because that woman's like 30 years, huh? It did not make sense.
I'll tell you, the panel, which Dean's talking about, we did at Comic-Con on the show. It was really a thrill because we had Dean and Jeff Fahey and Vivica Fox and Rob Picardo and, you know, Leilani Kalkas and Leilani Sorrell and a lot of people that I really dig. And but it was so gratifying because it was the first time we actually were out publicly since the show premiered, mm-hmm. and to hear the feedback from the fans because people were really passionate about the show.
Were you surprised?
I was a little surprised, you know, that people were, that felt that strongly about it, and they asked such smart questions, you know. Yeah. I was really, really gratified. I mean, there were a couple, and people were referring to, knew the episodes really well, and really wanted to see more of the mythology, and it was, you know, exactly the response that Steve and I think, really hoped for, and it was really...
I was surprised at the women saying, I like the women empowerment of the whole thing, which is the thing that you were always going for in this. But that it really connected to the women going, yeah, we like to see that. And that must be really gratifying for
women. It was great. It was great not only that some of the women came up and talked about that, but Jeff Fahey mentioned it too. And he's like, I loved being in an episode or, you know, a series where the beautiful woman isn't just supporting the man. It's the beautiful woman is, you know, strong and powerful. And he's like, it was great to see that, you know, kind of... just to be on a set where the woman gets that much credit.
Right. And as an actress, I'm sure you rarely get roles like that.
Yeah, no, it's been great. Yeah.
How awesome is that?
It's pretty awesome. And I'll tell you, I mean, because we've taken, you know, a couple of snarky comments about, oh, yeah, sure, empowered female protagonist means she goes around killing men, you know. And it's like, but, you know, which I really resent that because I think there's very few shows on the air that have women as strong as on our show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically they have different ways of coping with their situations and they don't take any shit from anybody. And I think that they're very, you know, well-developed. You know, it's not like... you know, these exploitive roles for women where they just, you know, hop in the bed with somebody and they get killed or, right. you know, whatever, and they're just ornaments. I mean, all, you know, all the women on our show are very, very smart, whether they're good or evil, whether they're a femme fatale, a heroic femme fatale, or a scheming Black Widow femme fatale, and, you know, none are taken advantage of by men. So, I mean, I think our show is very unique. I think it's very fun. I think that, you know, for the budget and the schedule we have, it's very impressive. You know, I'm really, you know, Steve and I have worked on a lot of network shows and, you know, a lot of features and things like that. But, I mean, this is by far the most fun and the most we've had doing and the most creative freedom. I mean, Cinemax has been great about, you know, sort of giving us a long leash for the most part and being very supportive of the show. I think they realize they have something very special.
Did Cinemax reward you by... perhaps increasing the budget for season two?
No, I wish they had. That would have been nice. You know, but
the thing when you deliver at that price, they go, "Wow, you guys do a great
you can
job.
Do
yeah,
it.
Keep doing it.
We
yeah,
don't.
Yeah.
You apparently don't need more."
So I'm sort of hoping that what'll happen now. You know, the ratings have been very good, and you know, particularly you know with the reviews and people are by the time we start talking about season three, whenever that is, that there'll be some kind of you know because we, it's just very hard
DVDs?
To do the show.
I would assume that they're planning on for a show like this that DVD sales could be
astronomical.
Well, I think we're in negotiations for a DVD deal now, and I think that we
I think a lot of people would.
A lot of extra material that we want to put on the DVD.
And this was what I was going to ask you, because again, Free Enterprise, to get back to this, another reason to check out the DVD is that it was the first, certainly the first DVD that I bought that really an incredible amount not only of bonus features but of carefully put together bonus features. Really, you know, I mean, it was gift after gift after gift.
Yeah, the first one that came out was pretty good. I mean, it was right at the beginning of DVD era. It was one of the last Laserdiscs ever produced, which was fitting. But
I got a Laserdisc of Free Enterprise.
Oh, I do.
You do?
Oh my, yes. And I'm sure Rob Burnett has several. And
but so I would love to.
But the second one we did is a two disc special edition, and it's insanely, it's so indulgent. I mean, there's like a 2-hour making of documentary. There's extensive book about the making of the movie. There's all kinds of special features, music videos, and
so will,
two commentary tracks.
Will Femme Fatale box set be equally blessed by bonus material?
I think so. I mean, we'll know when the deal is done, but I know the people that we're talking to want that kind of ample bonus materials to set it apart from the TV show.
Was there a making of film crew?
There was a making of film crew that interviewed everyone behind the scenes.
There should be a little
they
piece
didn't talk
on
to
Catherine,
you?
On Catherine demonstrating swordplay. I'm just saying.
You know what? There's a one of the gentleman that works, I don't know what his technical title, it's Carlos, what producer?
A line producer.
Line producer. He actually works at Swords too. So I'm gonna bring in my either lightsaber or fencing equipment or something one day, and we're gonna go at it. The only problem is that I've been trained to fight with swords and not hurt people, and he's been trained to fight with swords and kill people. So it's gonna be interesting.
What?
Because he's actually trained in like I'm trained in swords combat.
But only trained to kill people below the line. So you're fine. You're fine.
That's funny.
So we'll put that on video and we'll put it on the behind the scenes.
That's awesome. Do you have any footage of you actually fighting? Like, is there a DVD of that you put out of any of your stage?
There's
fighting?
Not right now, but soon. It's called Warrior Showdown. If you go to warriorshowdown.com, there's fighting. I'm not fighting with a sword, but I'm a biker chick and I fight with a chain.
Oh.
So I pull up in a motorcycle. I get off like it's a, you know, Vanity Fair shoot with the wind blowing my hair. And then a Scottish Highlander comes out and I beat the shit out of him. And it's really cool because they determine who wins the fight by votes on the internet. So if you go to warriorshowdown.com.
And NPR will be doing something on that next week.
I hope so. It's right up their alley. Come on. But it's cool, so they can see me fight warriorshowdown.com. And it's not out yet, but it should be out in the next month or two.
Okay.
Yeah, so keep checking. You should. Well, there's pictures of me, too, so you can just see my outfit. I have tats.
I've already voted for her like 20 times.
Really? And the website's not up yet?
Well, voting was open, and then it was a tie between me and the Scottish Highlander, because some people don't want to see hot chicks fight. They want to see guys in kilts fight. I know.
Well, that's retarded.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Some people are just retarded.
So a week before our fight goes up, we recorded both endings, where I die, where he dies. The week before the fight is going up, it's going to have a tiebreaker vote. So I'll definitely tell you guys when it is.
And oh, my God.
You guys have to vote for me.
Awesome.
Yay. So I can go to the next round and fight. I don't know if it's a Viking or the Roman soldier.
So it's like Mortal Kombat? You keep going up?
Yeah, it's based on Mortal Kombat and the Toughest Warrior. I think it's a Discovery show right now.
Oh, yeah. I can't.
You don't watch anything but Femme Fatales. It's the only thing on your TV. It's ongoing. On demand.
That's how sad that is. Just my, our parts.
Just his episode.
Just you. Damn, I look good. Kip, don't go in there. You don't want to die. You're not going to come back now. You're dead. Damn it, Kip.
Why didn't I keep that Tommy Bahama shirt that they put me in?
You could have stumbled out of there with like a Band-Aid on your head after she gloved you with the thing. It's like, oh my God. Oh man, it hurts.
That's hilarious. Awesome. So what then is next for, when do you start the next?
Well, they're already starting.
We're shooting, apparently. We finish in the fall. We'll finish shooting the rest of the second season, which is exciting. And then
and
we'll.
The same 3-day shoots and the same crazy production?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with pickup days and things like that, and same crazy shoots and same crazy people. Wow. And there's a nice article in American Cinematographer this month about our DP, Roger Chingarian, who's terrific, who's the unsung hero of the show.
Amazing.
And so
he was Kip.
Oh, yeah. He was Kip.
That's why my camera work looks so good.
It's phenomenal. and then, you know, and then Visions premieres, you know, the 2-part finale, which the girls are great in. We shot out in Silver Lake, and it's sort of a lot of fun. It's a great sort of old noir. It was inspired by the Tyrone Power movie Nightmare Alley. So it was really. It was super fun to do and to play with the mythology of the show and bring back so many characters. And, you know, the girls are great. And there's an actor in it, Mark Crumpton, who plays the amazing Mysterium. Basically, the premise is there's a guy who's had all these bogus, he's a bogus mentalist who has all these fake visions, and then he starts to have real visions. Oh. And now that, you know, allows him to sort of use this newfound ability for his own selfish, nefarious purposes, but the girls are going to put an end to that.
And can I have a shout out to other girls that come back, Stacey Stass and Christine Donlan, if you guys have been following Femme Fatales, are in Visions too.
No. And yay. Tiffany Brower is back too.
She has a cameo.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
She jammed everyone in. That's awesome. Well, not everyone. I was also very impressed just at the panel, how you controlled the panel. You moderated that thing, and then you went through all the and remembered everyone's name. Without even missing a beat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well.
Me up, because I'm like, you're walking down, and there's like, you know, 25 of the girls from Femme Fatale, and you just walk down, and you point at each one, and you have their full name. And
there's a guy with a cue card in the back.
You know,
No. I used the old Jedi mind trick. I wasn't right about any of them, but it sounded like, no. No, it's a lot of people have worked on the show now. You know, we have a couple of different, you know, on an anthology show. I mean, it's been so many people.
Yeah.
So it is getting to the point now where it's a little, you know, tough to keep track of everyone. But I'm still maybe
but
by third season.
But you were always impressed by Chris Carter's ability to do very much that.
Is that
someone,
an executive producer skill that I don't know? Chris Carter, he had a friend of mine go, hey, can you get me in on this audition for X-Files? I was in second season. You know, I had one day. He's not going to remember me. But, you know, come on in. We'll go.
So years later, he wants to come in for a bigger part.
Yeah, it's like 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk in, and even before I say, hey, Chris, he looks right over my shoulder. The guy goes, hey, you played the sheriff in season 2. Hey, you want to come in and audition for this thing? Like, what? Like, how did you even remember that?
See,
that kind of memory.
But Chris is a much better surfer than I am. But yeah, you know, that was impressive. Like, I think it's important. I think it's important because I one of the things I really hate is the way, you know, it's the old Hitchcock expression, you know, that actors are cattle. And the only way I like to treat them as cattle is to feed them well. And, you know, I think it's very disrespectful. You know, people work really hard and they have to deal with a lot of disrespect, you know, in casting. You know, I've seen these sessions where the producers and the directors and everyone won't even talk to the talents that come through. I think anybody's taking the time to come in, you know, and you know, spend hours preparing material on the hope that they will get a job over, you know, however many other people are coming to read, you know, at least give them the time of day. And plus, I'm always making mental notes. Somebody may not be right for one role, but maybe for the future. And so I think it's very important to respect actors. At least you can do is remember their names. You know, that's my, particularly people who've worked for you. So,
right.
You know, I mean, I try. I mean, I run to people from movies I've done 8-10 years ago, and you know, I don't want to be the one who doesn't remember the name. It's sort of awkward.
Oh my God. You will be in the, like Martin Sheen. He was on the.
A great one.
So, Martin Sheen's family's in town. They want to come to the X-Files set, and he's sitting there, and he's like, and this is when Robert Patrick was on. It's like, wow, who's that actor? Oh, you want to meet him? Yeah, I really like to meet him. He seems really, like, really got his crap together. So one of the PAs comes over to Robert Patrick. Robert Patrick, Mr. Sheen would like to meet you. And he goes, what the fuck? What? bullshit. We spent 3 months together in Mexico. I played his son in this movie.
I thought it was on stage. I actually thought they were on Broadway all summer long.
No, no. They spent. They were enclosed in a Mexican border town shooting this movie where he played the son. They had scenes together. They were like, it was like this intimate bonding experience that Robert Patrick remembered. Martin Sheen completely.
But to Sheen's credit, he was drunk the whole time, so.
Well, no, and then they had to explain to Martin Sheen that, in fact, Martin Sheen is not the president. I've heard that that explanation had to take place quite often.
No,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's embarrassing.
That's embarrassing. You don't even go, oh, yeah, we worked together for 3 months.
Yeah.
Apparently, Paula Abdul came up to him at a party going, hey, how's everybody? You know the thing? And then it was like, oh, great. And his wife came up. You didn't know who that was. That's your ex-sister or ex-daughter-in-law, because she was married to and didn't remember that she had come over to family dinners. Like, not like that. Just stared at this chick.
Oh, that's terrible.
Isn't that terrible?
Oh, my God.
Now, Dean, didn't Bobby De Niro tell you never to name drop?
I think Bobby De Niro.
You're really good. That's
when I was at the White House advising Obama on the debt limit.
said, don't name drop. Hilarious.
Dead limit. Try producing an anthology show on what Showtime's giving us.
Yeah.
That's what you said.
Cinemax.
I'm sorry.
We don't mention the S word.
Sorry. I did it because he did it the last time, and this time it was my fault. Yeah. He introduced, you remember he introduced Steve, and he introduced Femme Fatales as being an S series show.
That's why they killed you off.
So what's next for you guys? Where will we see you?
Okay, well, we'll see us.
And when you say guys, you mean ladies?
Ladies.
Yes. Okay.
Right. Okay.
I'm being in the generic.
Right.
Guys.
Right, but they can't see who we're gesturing to in an audio only show.
Exactly. They'll be in Whittier with Steve Kazier.
So he's looking at the ladies and asking them
I'm
setting the scene. Madison is about to tell us what she'll be doing next.
Okay. Well, right now I'm actually working on a web series called Nuclear Coleslaw, where I also kill guys. And it's
a recurring theme in her career. Stay away.
And it's fun because lately I've been getting these roles where I'm actually very much in charge, like a bitch in charge, where I've never had that before. It's always the ditzy person. But now lately I'm really excited about doing all these like fun roles that are really like meaty kind of roles and cool. So I've just been working on that, and they're mostly out in the desert. Yeah.
Let me ask you about this, about the ditzy role, though, because, you know, traditionally, especially going all the way back to screwball comedies, the ditzy part was often the part that was in charge.
You know what? Actually, yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because they're actually very smart people. I mean, ditzy is something you can play up.
It's disarming. It's disarming, especially towards men. Right? I mean, there is a certain empowerment.
A lot of people don't know how to read you, too, which is also empowering. Where I have people in everyday life that come up to me and they're like, is this for real? Are you for real? And I'm always like, yeah, I'm sure you get that all the time, Dean. Like, exactly the same thing. And you're like, yeah, but you know, you can play it up as in like, if like you don't know what they're thinking, but I know what everybody's thinking. I'm a smart person, but it's fun because it is empowering because you are in charge. Actually, that's a good
point. That was one of the things that I think Steve and I really responded to in her audition. Even Steve was in Whittier, so maybe one of the things I responded to was that she has a real Carol Lombard kind of screwball, you know, early Marilyn Monroe kind of quality, you know, where, you know, she can play sexy, but she's also just very funny and screwball comedy in a way. And, you know, when we're casting, we always look to sort of the touchstones of the classic, you know, sort of era of screwball comedy and noir, you know, and to me, she had that quality. And I think that's what makes her so good on the show, you know, and awesome. Such a fine actress.
Do you do the same thing in Nuclear Coleslaw?
No, not at all. No. That's just more I'm just a badass chick.
Which is fun. That?
It's online, actually. I don't know if it's aired yet.
NuclearPotatoSalad.com.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wait.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
Which one?
You're saying
macaroni salad?
No, it's not actually out yet.
Sauerkraut?
What's the name of it?
Nuclear Coleslaw.
Nuclear Coleslaw.
It's pretty fun.
Forget all other vegetables.
All other side dishes. There's no nuclear cornbread.
It's a nuclear picnic.
Nuclear picnic.
No. Nuclear coleslaw. I type that in my Google search and I'll find this thing.
Hopefully soon, yes.
Okay, excellent. And Catherine?
Yes, sir.
What are you doing?
Well, I already plugged Warrior Showdown. Yes. And
I know we talked about Super Shark last time, and it's premiering at Fright Fest in this summer. So hopefully it'll get picked up by, I don't know what they're doing with distribution, but it's finished.
Super Shark.
And it's coming out. And I think if you're at Fright Fest, check it out.
Awesome. And then there'll be a whole series of Super Shark versus Croctopus and the whole...
I hope so, but I'm dead, so it doesn't matter. I don't care. I mean, Fred Olen Ray, I really care. I hope it continues.
She's the Susan Blakely of Croctopus or whatever.
Yeah.
And the woman who was killed at the beginning of Jaws.
Yeah, the hot girl. You're like, ooh, hot girl, Jaws. Or Super Shark. And then I just booked this really fun movie that's shooting in September called Hotel Arthritis, where it's a horror comedy where there's a killer at a...
at a retirement home.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's sexy.
It's sexy. Oh, God. These old women get their clothes off and everything. No.
Ow. Betty White and Catherine Annette star.
Well, but it's gonna be really fun. And I play not one of the old women. I play one of the granddaughters. So that it's just going to be a whole bunch of fun. So.
Awesome. Looking forward to that.
And a chance to work with probably some really groovy character
actors.
Say.
Yeah, they're bringing a lot of people that, you know, like, I don't want to name names because nobody's, you know, signed the contract yet, but there's a whole bunch of people they're talking to that are very
Johnny Depp.
Bobby De Niro.
Yeah, not the name drop.
But check it out on Facebook. I think they have a page, so.
Yeah. And that's called again
Hotel Arthritis.
Hotel.
Yeah, and I have to tell you that you know, Catherine, you know, one of the reasons we brought her back in Visions is another example of an actress that we just thought was spectacular. I mean, she's really good in Girls Gone Dead, and it was just a case where it's like, wow, she's so good. We got to find a way to bring her back, you know, and because she's really good at what she does. I mean, she's really talented, and it's somebody who, you know, we'd like to see in the show again. So it's always, you know, a challenge, you know, finding a new way to bring people in, you know, bring people back. But you know, it's definitely something we want to do. And you know, Catherine's put on that short list of people that we want to bring back. So we have a comedy now that we want to do with Madison, sort of Goldie Hawn type of comedy, and we want to bring Catherine back too because she's so great.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Yay.
You know,
we want to get Steve back from Whittier. Yeah. So.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, guys.
Mark, what was apparent when I met you in Hawaii now, you know, 13
was
years ago.
Was a dick.
No, and what is true clearly from Femme Fatales, you not only assemble a group of people around you who are, I mean, nice is such a soft word, but are just brimming with personality and incredibly personable as well. And I find it to be quite a credit to you because, you know, it's so much fun. And even in Hawaii, when I first met you, I was made to feel very welcome in your circle.
Well, you know what? We're just lucky we're not working in a coal mine. You know, every day I wake up and, you know, to be able to do what I love and television and film and you know, make a living at it, you know, you just got to be grateful. So, you know, these people who have an attitude and a chip on their shoulder about it, you know, I have no use for that. It's like, you know, you got to enjoy what you do. And, you know, it just, you can't be, you know, it's like I could be an accountant or a lawyer or something. And I'd be, you know, so it's like I got to enjoy the fact that this is, you know, that we get to do this. And you know, Femme Fatales is the kind of show where, you know, you set the tone from, you know, people aren't getting paid a lot of money. And so the tone is set from the top. So Steve and I, you know, believe in running a fun set and you know, where everybody feels, you know, welcome. And as I said before, we feed people well. That goes a long way. So
running, you know, a fun set. I might try to do that sometime on one of my movies.
Maybe this podcast.
Madison, did you want to say something?
I actually had to say that this was the most fun set you've ever been on. It's almost like they are like a family. Like everybody's a family and they really care about you. And I have to say, like before, like any scenes that like are more revealing than the other ones, like physically, like body wise, like
Steve comes over, inspects everything, makes sure.
Like, I've had like Mark would come up to me and be like, okay, this is what we're doing. And he would like walk me through it, which is very like kind. And like, it was like, you weren't expecting that from like a normal, you know, producer. They're more like, just like, okay, action, go. But like Mark had a talk with you. Are you okay with everything? And it was just very kind. And like people on the set are, they know you by name. They, the food is very good. And the trailers are so fun because they bought us flowers for the finale one when we came back. And it was so sweet.
I would like
it
to
really
say
does.
I've never had the food because we're naked so much we can't eat it.
Oh, Yeah,
like,
see,
well, we're gonna be.
It does sound like every family reunion. I've had lots of gifts, good food, nudity, and violence. Mark, really quick, we alluded to the fact that before becoming a prolific writer and producer, you were a writer and a editor on at least one magazine that I know of. But perhaps others.
Do we know?
This is back when journalism was.
This is what I wanted to ask you about. Was, you know, the change in journalism you've witnessed from when that was your full time gig?
Yeah, I mean, I was an entertainment journalist for a number of years. I mean, I worked for the Boston Globe and I worked for a bunch of other people. You know, I owned Cine Fantastic and Femme Fatales for a while. Started Geek Monthly before we sold it. Worked for some other magazines. Edited some other magazines. And I am so appalled by the state of entertainment journalism today. I've read interviews with me about this show that I you know, say no press, you know, no press is bad press. Wrong. I mean, I got to tell you, these articles are appalling. I don't understand how people can write who have like a you know, look like the last time they took an English class was like in kindergarten. I mean, it is embarrassing. I had a guy interview me for an hour, and then literally he wrote up my IMDb entry and basically wrote what it was like to talk to me. I mean, it was, and everything was wrong. And it was just, it was, you know, I'm appalled.
One of the reasons why for our documentary that we've made, I wrote really elaborate and careful production notes and press kits. And I can't tell you how many times the article, the interview, just ends up being a reconfiguration of what I've given them.
Oh,
in
my
the press
God.
Kit. And quite frankly, thank God.
Yeah, HBO did a press release about the show, and I mean, every article, it just is regurgitated from the press release, and it's just, it's really sad to me that this is the state of contemporary journalism, because this is the future. I mean, it used to be, you know, that, I mean, I know how seriously I took even writing about the most frivolous of subjects. You know, you could be on the set of Cyborg 2, but at least you would attempt to do something, you know, and transcribe it and do these interviews and write in cogent sentences. That doesn't happen anymore. I mean, these bloggers and these people right out of their basement, it's just heinous. And at major news outlets too. It's just, it makes me sick. I mean, when I read some of the stuff that are written about the show, and it's good stuff. I mean, they're complimentary, but it's so badly written that it just makes me crazy, apoplectic.
Yeah, even rude. Entertainment Weekly, the thing with Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford, the article in there about cowboys and aliens. The reporter is going on about Daniel Craig's private wedding. Like 3 or 4, and Daniel Craig, it's like this confrontation.
What?
That they, and then he prints it up. And it's just like this weird article. It's like right in the middle, like 2 or 3 chunks of it. And you're like,
that's weird.
What are you even putting this in for? It was like crazy.
And everything is so cynical and sarcastic. And I mean, you know, it's funny. That was sort of my stock and trade when I used to write for Cine Fantastic. It was a little more arch and a little more honest. And, you know, but I read the stuff that's everything now, and everyone thinks, you know, it's ridiculous. And you know, and like I said, it's sort of, you know, working its way through osmosis into the mainstream press. And I just, the state of journalism, I just don't know. I mean, if, you know, journalism's there to sort of keep everybody honest and to be objective.
I think with the mainstream press, you know, the problem has been that they have to actually respond to the speed of online press. And mm-hmm. That's really how it initially got
yep.
affected.
Yep.
Just the speed of it led to sloppiness.
Yep.
And though the irony seems to be that for the first time now, after years of decline, local newspapers are starting to see their circulation rise, their ad rates, revenue rise, because people are suddenly realizing, oh, wait a minute, we don't need to go to smaller papers for news, but we can go to them for analysis that's measured a little bit more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you know it's not going to be up to the minute, instead you know it's going to be thoughtful, you might go there for that very reason.
Yes.
And that's what I hope we'll see more of.
I hope so too.
And at least what you're describing is, at least it creates an environment where cream can rise, where if you are a blogger at home with real skill, with real writing ability and a real journalistic editorial eye, the good news is I think you probably can find your way through the wilderness and attract an audience?
I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, people ask, you know, did you go to film school? I'm like, no. Well, how did you learn to, you know, produce? And I said, I learned to produce by being a journalist and asking people that I admire and I respected the right questions. Right. And I mean, it's very rare that I ever get asked an intelligent question about producing or about writing. And
We asked one.
There were a couple today. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming on the
thank
show.
Thank you for having us.
Awesome.
Thank you so
thank you.
Much.
Thank you. And
can we follow you on Twitter? Who's got a Twitter shout out?
Oh, I do. I'm learning how to use it right now, though. It's Madison Dillon, D-Y-L-A-N.
Okay.
Me as well. I'm learning. We'll learn together. Okay. It's Kat Annett, C-A-T-A-N-N-E-T-T.
Excellent.
I don't believe in social media.
No, it really exists.
You have one.
It does. It exists.
I don't believe in it. I think it's...
Yes,
there is a Femme Fatale's television series fan page that they should go to
on
Facebook. That's right.
Facebook/Femme.
Yes, I don't think you can say anything profound in 140 characters or less.
It's, no, but then you can just lead them to a website where you are profound.
That's true. I guess that's true.
Right?
That's true. That's true. I mean, I know this. I think the show has a Twitter feed, and they write things in my name, but it's not it's not me. It's not the real me.
I'm sending you messages.
Really? What have you been saying? Anyway.
That's so sad. Anyway, and you can find us.
Well, you're twitter.com/dhaglund.
Dhaglund.
And I'm twitter.com/phillairness.
Full name.
You can find many episodes of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour at chillpackhollywood.com. Mm-hmm. Download, stream, and subscribe via iTunes. Be a liker of the show on Facebook.
Like
Facebook.com.
Is that a real word?
Chill Pack Hollywood. It is now. I use it in quotes.
A liker.
Where else? Oh, and write us.
Write us, please.
Chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
We answer all our emails.
Oh, I thought you were going to give them an address.
Yeah.
snail mail address. Feel free to. Well, he did kind of. He talked about where we are. He couldn't be more specific.
Yeah, exactly.
Next week, you'll introduce the show by giving GPS coordinates. And finally, Madison, I hope that being on Chill Pack Hollywood Hour helped you cheer up a little bit. Because I'm concerned.
Oh, you're being sarcastic.
That's hilarious.
Thank you, everybody. This was so much fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Catherine, go pick out a gift.